Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World podcast. This is a practical gun podcast done by a practical guy, and that is me in this 307th episode. I'm going to answer some listener voicemails. I like getting these because, first of all, it tells me that people are getting engaged and they're starting to think. They're starting to think about some of the topics I cover and some of the information that I put together, and that's good. You know, I kind of judge the success of my show a little bit by the number of voicemails and emails that I get, and there's been a lot of them lately. Now, not to say that I'm right about everything. I'm not right about everything. And, you know, this podcast, I've said this many times, this is a journey. This is a learning experience for me as much as it is for you. And I learn and I pick something up from every voicemail that's called in. So if you'd like to call into the show, the number is 210-646-1727. I'll say that again and I'll slow down. 210-646-1727. Or you can just go to handgunworld.com, and on the right-hand side there is a Call Me button, and you can get automatically connected with my voicemail. Hey, you know, I think I've forgotten to mention recently, you can also get email updates on my show. Every time I put up a new episode or a new page or modify a page or whatever, if you want to subscribe to email updates, I don't spam you. The only time you ever get an email is when there's a new show or an update to my website. You can go and sign up for email updates directly at handgunworld.com. If you go about, let's see, it's the second selection on the right-hand margin where it says get updates by email. Let me invite you to do that. And also, would you guys mind doing something for me? It's been a while since there's been an iTunes review put up. So if you do me a favor, if you do listen to, if you do use iTunes, go to the Handgun World podcast iTunes feed and put up a review on iTunes for me, if you would. You know, whenever new people are checking out the show, they use iTunes to kind of help make their decision. I know that I do when I'm looking at other podcasts. All right, let's take the first voicemail.
Hey, Bob, this is Dave in Utah. I've had some feedback. A couple of shows ago, you answered a caller's question where they asked what makes one gun better than another. And, you know, for the most part, I agree with you. I entirely agree with you with what you said. I would just say that, you know, obviously the most important thing for a gun that you're going to use to save your life potentially is reliability. Does it function? Is it going to fire and cycle every time you pull the trigger? And I think the best example of that is the Glock. I think M&Ps, from what I've heard of M&Ps, is that they probably are capable of that, but they just have not been around long enough to develop the reputation that a Glock does. So I would say the first thing is reliability. The second thing you need to consider is that can you shoot the gun comfortably? Is it comfortable for you to shoot? If it's comfortable for you to shoot, it's going to be fun to go shoot it. You're going to shoot a lot and get good with it. And so, I mean, you need to look at how the gun fits in your hand. You need to actually go to a range and rent one and shoot it, see if it's you know, does it beat you up? Because that, you know, I've heard like a Walther PPK fits a lot of people's hands really well, but I've heard from people that when you shoot it, it kind of, you know, thumps you in the web of your hand pretty good. So go ahead and try those out. And then I guess the third thing is, like, can you hit a target with it reasonably well? I mean, obviously, if you've never shot a handgun before, you're not going to have pinpoint accuracy, but, you know, with a target up close, are you able to put the bullets pretty much where you want to? Now, Bob, you said that you like, you know, you got the Glock. The Glocks work for you, and that you don't really like the SIG. I think I've called in and told you before, but I have, you know, Glocks. I've tried Glocks before, and they work fine. Personally, me, I really do like my SIG. When I got it, you know, I was looking for a gun that had a hammer and had a safety. I didn't know a lot about handguns, and I was kind of leaning toward a Beretta because I think it's what the Army has. When I got to the store, the gun store clerk kind of talked me out of the Beretta just because of the way the safety works. And he showed me, and I mean, he tried to, like, say, well, the Glocks are really good, and for whatever reason, which, you know, I can't explain it now, but I was just like, nah, I don't want a Glock. I want it with a hammer. And he's like, all right. So he showed me the SIG. And I liked that the SIG, that the safety was that it had a long double-action trigger pull frame. It seemed like it made a lot of sense for reloading. Hey, Bob, this is Dave in Utah again. I just wanted to follow up with my last call. Hopefully it's not too much trouble to pack these together. All right, but talking about the slide release on the SIG, I figured that if you have to reload a gun, if you have to do it in a hurry, I mean, you're going to need to be able to do it fast. And I thought that reaching up and hitting the lever to release the slide rather than reaching up and tugging on the slide would be faster. And so I really like the way that the SIG slide stop lever is designed, because it's basically, it sticks out from the gun a little bit. It's like a button. Basically, when you're ready to release the slide, you just reach up with your firing hand thumb and mash down on the button that releases the slide. And so that makes sense to me. I know on the Glock, or even on my M&T, the slide stop lever, it doesn't really stick out from the slide much, and it doesn't make sense to reach up and try and hit that with your thumb. It seems like you would just, in that case, it would be just faster to just pull the slide back. So, and I know that slide stop set so far back on the frame, it really befuddles people like John Hadaway, who are really used to shooting 1911s, because they think that's the safety. That's where you put your thumb to disengage the safety. And so when they shoot a SIG, you know, they just hold that button down and the slide doesn't lock back, and it's frustrating for them. So when I got the gun, the clerk explained to me that with the double action trigger pull, you know, while it would have the effect of having like a safety, you know, a very deliberate first shot, it's going to be harder to make it go off accidentally. To be able to get good with it, you are going to have to spend some time doing dry fire practice and working that trigger. And so I accepted that because I had rented one of the SIGs, shot it, and shot really well with it. And then, you know, after I had it for a while and shot it a few months, I went and took a class and got better at shooting it, learned how to use the sights and how to be more precise. And then, you know, last year, a couple years ago, when I finally took a Mag 40 with Misada U, I was able to shoot at 298 with my SIG. So obviously it's possible to shoot accurately with a SIG. It sounds like, you know, it didn't work for you, Bob. Like, you know, with me, with shoes, I know New Balance makes really good shoes, but they always give me blisters, even when I get them in the right size. That's just how they work with me. So yeah, if you want to get a SIG, you know, just understand that there's a way to work it, and if you want to get a Glock, there's a, you know, certain methodology for working that too. All right, thanks, Bob, and keep up the good work.
Thanks for the call, Dave. He said a lot of good things in that voicemail. Just one thing I want to caution everybody about when you heard Dave talking about reloading. Yeah, the slide release or slide stop, whatever name you want to give it, on the SIG is pretty convenient. I just want everybody to be careful about thinking about reloading in a civilian self-defense gunfight. What I'm talking about is a lot of people think that they're going to reload when they're out of ammo. And I'm sorry, but that's just very, very unrealistic. The most probable scenario for you to reload, I'm talking about civilian gunfights now, okay? Civilian defensive, reactive encounters. The most typical time for you to reload is if you have a malfunction. All right? How many of you have heard or read somebody say, well, I got 8 rounds in my gun and I'm carrying another 8-round magazine, so that gives me 16 total rounds to defend my life? I don't buy into that. How many of you have heard that? I don't buy into that because I think the chances of you having to reload in a gunfight that typically is over in 3, 4, 5 rounds, typically, the chances of you having to reload to put in more ammo after you've already fired 8 or 9 rounds, I think it's very, 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 very slim. Now, the chances of malfunction could be higher. And Dave alluded to that. So anyway, I just wanted to say, I don't know what Dave was talking about there, but he is right. He is right about reloading SIGs. They're you know, a SIG Sauer, typical double-action, single-action pistol is pretty easy to reload. I've never reloaded any of their, their one and only striker-fired gun because I've never fired it. Okay, and I'm not talking about their 1911s. Now, yes, you can shoot accurately with a SIG, especially if you master that double-action, single-action trigger, if you have the type of SIG that's a double-action, single-action gun. It's just, you know, like I said, and like Dave pointed out in the voicemail, it's just never been for me. I like to have the same consistent trigger pull every single time. I don't want to have to think about much at all if I have to use my handgun in self-defense. God forbid. I just certainly hope that that day never comes. Now, one other thing I want to point out that Dave mentioned early in the voicemail, he was talking about the reliability of Glocks. And while Glocks have built a long reputation for good reliability, I will say this. Maybe some of you have never thought you'd ever hear Bob Main on the Handgun World podcast say this, but I've seen some fourth generation Glocks really mess up. Now, mine have been fine. I had two malfunctions with one of my fourth gen Glocks very early in the 1,000 round trigger job. It was like within the first 80 or 90 rounds. I had two malfunctions with the same pistol. And when I reused the magazines later on, I didn't have the malfunction. So I really don't know what happened with that. But I've seen some fourth generation Glocks have some reliability issues. And I've seen some very, very flawless Smith & Wesson M&Ps. So yeah, Glocks have been around far longer than M&Ps, but I got to tell you something. I'm a big fan of the Smith & Wesson M&Ps. I'm carrying my M&P shield right now. You know, neither of my shields have given me any problems whatsoever. The one that I eventually gave away in the Shooters Club giveaway last year, and the one that I have now, they've been completely, completely flawless. Not one single issue. I also have an M&P 9 Compact that's been flawless, and I have an M&P Pro. That Ben Branham is borrowing right now, by the way, because I'm going to be out of shooting for a few months. So I had no problem letting him borrow that for a while. But for me, that gun has never malfunctioned. I can't remember if Ben's reported any with that or not. I think with his own M&P, he's had a couple of malfunctions. But I got to say, the Smith & Wesson M&Ps and the Springfield XDs, I think, all have pretty decent reliability records. So, you know, I used to be a really super hardcore Glock guy, and even though I still love Glocks and still have Glock 19s and a Glock 26, I'm really warming up to the Smith & Wesson M&Ps. I gotta say that. And like I said, nothing wrong with the Springfield XD guns. Alright, let's take the next voicemail.
Hello, Bob. This is Eric out here. Hey, I was the guy who called with the question on what makes one gun better than another. You know, I'm calling just to thank you for the dialogue there. I didn't expect that. I expected something much shorter. So anyways, I'll tell you where I ended up. I ended up with a Glock 17. I'm out here in California. Our choices are very limited. I'm sure you're aware of our situation out here. I chose the full size because CCWs are far and few between, or at least that's what I thought at one time. It turns out that they're a little easier than a lot of people will lead you to believe. So I ended up with the Glock. I like the SIG. The reason I chose the Glick. The reason I chose the Glick was because of the trigger. I like that consistent trigger pull over the double action pull, first pull of the SIG. Although I do like the SIGs. So that's that. Thanks again. See you later. Bye.
Hey, Eric. Well, thanks for the original voicemail, and thanks for this voicemail. Hey, you never know. Whenever you call into my show, you never know when I just might make an entire topic out of your voicemail. Eric, you know, I thought that your question about what makes one gun better than another, I thought that was kind of a cool, pretty cool question. I thought it was, you know, would make for a really good topic. So I'm glad that you felt like you got more response than you deserved. I'll tell you why I picked that topic is because it seems to be the subject of such huge debate. What makes one gun better than the other? I mean, there's really no clear-cut answer to that. But I, of course, because this is my show, I had to throw my two cents in there. And so I did. But so you chose the Glock 17 over the SIG. And, you know, again, they're great guns. And it's just really a matter of personal preference. Now, Dave talked earlier about a gun feeling good in your hand. I think that's very important. So I think that's extremely important. And, you know, Eric, I know what you mean about the consistent trigger pull. You know, 1911s have it. Most, well, all striker-fired guns have it. I've never seen a striker-fired gun that didn't have the same consistent trigger pull every time. Even revolvers, for you revolver shooters out there. You know, you can fire a revolver, some of them, in single action by cocking the hammer. But if you're firing in double action only mode, then it's going to have the same, even though it might be a long, hard trigger pull, it's going to be the same one every single time. Same with these little 380 pocket pistols. Most of these little 380 pocket pistols, they all pretty much have consistent trigger pulls. Even if you get the 1911 style of pocket pistol. Notice I didn't say 1911 because I've had people beat me up saying that, you know, like the SIG P238, for example, is not a true 1911. Okay, well, they're right. It's not a true 1911, but it's a 1911 style. Let's put it that way. It's got a consistent trigger pull, you know, because you should be carrying a gun like that, cocked and locked, with a proper pocket holster. There's no problem. Yeah, you know, that's the other thing. Is I've read and I've heard so many people say, oh, I'd never carry one of those little pocket 1911 style 380s because, you know, carry it in the pocket cocked and locked. Well, that's a problem. It's no different. It's no different carrying it cocked and locked in your pocket than it is carrying it cocked and locked on your hip. As long as you have a good proper holster. If you have a good proper pocket holster that covers the trigger guard and keeps the gun in place like it's supposed to, and it doesn't let the gun fall out or doesn't let the gun move around, I don't see any problem carrying a little pocket pistol cocked and locked, if that's the style of little tiny 380 that you have. So now we got the SIG P238, we got the Colt Mustang, whatever, and Kimber's got a little, I forgot what they call it, but they got one of those little micro 380 1911 style guns. So, good calls. Very good voicemail calls. And if you want to call in, please do so. Now, I will tell you that this podcast, this probably will be the last one for a while. I know I keep saying that. But I'm in the Handgun World mobile studio right now. And it's only going to be a couple days from when this podcast airs that I'm going to be stuck in the hospital for quite some time because I'm going to be entering the transplant phase of my stem cell transplant. So I don't know how I'm going to feel. I know I'm going to get probably pretty bored in the hospital. I don't know how I'm going to feel. So I have to say this is going to be the last one for a while. I'd rather surprise you guys and have a podcast show up when you're not expecting one, than to let you down through disappointment, saying, oh, I'll be on here every week, and I really can't. Okay? But keep the voicemails coming in, because when I am able to do another show, if there's voicemails in my inbox, I will definitely address those. Okay, I want to make a quick announcement before getting into the next segment of the show. The announcement is that I've put all of the 2015 offerings, the training class offerings that Ben and I are teaching, they're all on my website right now, handgunworld.com. So if you want to sign up for San Antonio, Dallas, Sioux Falls, Seattle, Houston, we've got them up there. Here's what I'm considering. I mentioned this in the last podcast. I'm very much considering a Suarez International course this summer. I want to teach Close Range Gunfighting 2 again, which is pretty much their flagship class. I want to teach that again this summer, probably in June or July. I should be good and pretty much on my road to recovery, because I will prevail from this, folks. I do plan on prevailing from this stem cell cancer treatment that I'm about to go through. I plan on doing a Suarez International course this summer, and there is a listener from Ohio that is trying to get Ben and I to come out to Ohio, so there's a very significant chance that in the fall, in the early fall, we'll be in Ohio. So to all of you Ohio area listeners, if you're near the northern Ohio area, or even central Ohio, we might be coming near you. Or even if you're within 3-4 hours, it's going to be well worth your time. It's most likely going to be a 2-day class. I'm really starting to like 2-day classes a lot better. And, you know, that's, I think if you're going to make the time to go to a training class, you're going to spend the money and spend the time, you might as well get 2 solid days out of it. Then that way you really get what you're really spending your time for, when you can be there for 2 days and get a lot of good training and a lot of good repetition. That's the thing, is repetition. I think in a training class, you got to have the repetition. You got to have the repetition. I would rather have an instructor teach just 2 or 3 really good techniques and just repetition, 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 drill them into me like there's no tomorrow, so that I don't forget them, or so that I can really set the foundation for a lot of good practice and follow-up later. Again, you know, I'd rather, instead of teaching 10 or 12 things all in the same class, I'd rather see just a few things taught and just over and over and over and over again, so that you got it down. Because that's the only way that you're going to get it down, is through repetition, in my humble opinion. Okay, let's take a quick break, and I'll be back with the next topic.
When did you first know about the program, officially, I believe, called Fast and Furious? To the best of your knowledge, what date?
I'm not sure of the exact date, but I probably heard about Fast and Furious for the first time over the last few weeks.
How about the head of the criminal division, sure, Lanny Brewer? Did he authorize it?
I'm not sure whether Mr. Brewer authorized it. I mean, you have to understand the way in which the department operates. Although there are operations, this one has gotten a great deal of publicity.
Yeah, they're dead Americans as a result of this failed and reckless program. So I would say that it hasn't gotten enough attention, has it, Mr. Attorney General?
It's not necessarily. I mean, there's an investigation that is underway, and we'll have to look at that to see exactly what happened with regard to...
Well, Mr. Attorney General...
I take very seriously the allegations...
Mr. Attorney General, do you take seriously... Mr. Attorney General, do you take seriously a subpoena signed by the Clerk of the House?
Of course.
Well, Mr. Attorney General, isn't it true that those cases that will go to trial in June... I have very limited time, I'm sorry. Those cases are basically a bunch of meth addicts who did the buying, that you do not have what this program was supposed to produce. You don't have the kingpins. You don't have the places it went. What you have are the people that you already had on videotape many, many months before indictments were brought. Isn't this true?
There are cases that are important that we are trying to bring, that we want to try successfully, and they are part of a scheme. They are part of a scheme. You can't look at a case and it's in as an individual matter and think it is unimportant, because small cases lead to larger ones.
We're looking at you. Straw purchasers, we're looking at you. We're looking at your key people who knew or should have known about this, and whether or not your judgment was consistent with good practices, and whether or not instead the Justice Department is basically guilty of allowing weapons to kill Americans and Mexicans. So will you agree to cooperate with that investigation, both on the House and Senate side?
We'll certainly cooperate with all the investigations, but I'm going to take great exception to what you just said. The notion that somehow or other this Justice Department is responsible for those deaths that you mentioned, that assertion is offensive. And I want to tell you that...
But what if it's accurate, Mr. Attorney General?
It is the policy of the Justice Department to make sure that we do all that we can to protect law enforcement agents. It is one of the reasons why I have tried to look at, you know, a whole variety of methods, techniques that we can use to protect the lives of law enforcement agents. It is something that this country is not focused enough on.
What am I going to tell Agent Terry's mother about how he died at the hand of a gun that was videotaped as it was sold to a straw purchaser, fully expecting it to end up in the hands of drug cartels?
Well, you know, one will have to see exactly what happened with regard to the guns that are at issue there. And I've attended funerals, you know. This is something that, this isn't theoretical, this is not political, this is extremely real for me as Attorney General.
Okay, the next topic I want to talk about is being careful what you put on the internet regarding guns, but more importantly, regarding how you're going to treat your gun. Here's what I'm talking about. A lot of times I see on the internet people put things on there such as, you know, I carry a certain kind of ammo because I don't want to have to fire more than once or twice. You know, stuff like that. Or, you know, carry this kind of a caliber because shooting twice is silly. Or they'll even put stuff on there and they'll use the words killing people and stuff like that. Hey, folks, I don't promote any kind of killing people on this show. Okay, I promote self-defense. I promote a defensive use of a firearm. If your life is truly, truly in danger of either being ended or grave bodily harm, then I promote that you use your firearm. Look, if the bad guy dies in the process of you defending yourself, well, then so be it. He made the bad choice to pick on you, and you made the good choice to have a firearm, and that was your last resort. Once again, it was your absolute last resort. See, most of you know I'm a man of faith, I'm a Christian. And a lot of people say, well, you know, it's not really Christian to take another life with a firearm. I'm not so sure about that. The Bible says, thou shalt not murder, but I don't believe that the self-defense use of a firearm is murdering. I think it's protecting your own life. You have a right to life. I'm also a big believer that you have a right to life. And if there's a bad guy full of evil and evil intent, and he wants to take your life away from you because of his choice, not God's, then I believe that you have a right to step in and use whatever means necessary to stop that. Now, some of my pastor friends, feel free to challenge me on that if you want to. You know, that's been my belief, and that's kind of the way that I interpret things. Of course, I'm not an ordained pastor, so, and this show is really not about religion, so I'm not going to ramble on too much about this. But if you can show me a really good argument why it's not, you know, a Christian or a good believer's idea to carry a handgun to protect his own life or the life of his family, then by all means, you know, set me straight and give it to me. But I don't believe in killing anybody. So just be real careful about what you put on the internet. Because if you've taken a Masada Yub course, you're going to find out, you know, or just talk to somebody maybe. Talk to somebody who's been either involved in a shooting or who's been involved in a court proceeding or a trial of somebody that's been on trial. Anything you say will be used against you. And especially stuff you put on the internet. So if you put stuff on the internet about, you know, purposefully or willfully killing another human being, I don't think that's a very good idea. Okay? I don't think that's a very good idea at all. Or if you put something on the internet that can incriminate you. And again, I'm talking about the internet. I'm not talking about the actual, you know, evidence of a shooting. And a whole different story there. But I'm talking about the internet, what you put on the internet before you have to use your firearm in self-defense. Don't make yourself look like you're the kind of person that's always looking for trouble, okay? And I can spot them a mile away on the internet, whether they're on a blog or whether they're on a forum or they're responding to a YouTube video or whatever. Okay, because some of the... It's not derogatory. Some of the self-incriminating stuff that people put on the internet. If you have somebody else who's reading that, even if it's a layperson reading that, even if it's someone that's not involved in what you're going through, I think it can and it will be used against you. As a matter of fact, that's a good judge of what do you put on the internet? I would only put on the internet or say on the internet whatever an ordinary and reasonable person would think is ordinary and reasonable. Okay? So in other words, I think it's ordinary and reasonable to say that if my life is in grave danger of being ended or I'm in danger of grave bodily harm, that I have the right to use whatever means necessary to defend it. Now, there are people who will disagree with me on that. Okay, there are people who will take exception to that. There are people who have the belief, a pacifist or a political belief or whatever, that don't think that I have the right to defend my life. And mainly that's due to either political correctness or just someone's internal, typically political beliefs, okay? Because it's funny, most of the people who don't believe that I have a right to carry a gun to protect my life are those who would want someone with a gun to protect their life if it was in danger, right? Isn't that amazing? All right, but what I'm talking about is amongst those of us who do believe that we have this right to self-defense and to use a gun. Don't put anything on the internet that is not, that a reasonable and an ordinary person who believes in self-defense, don't put anything on there that's not in line with what they would typically believe or typically support. And it's a guessing game, but, you know, just think of yourself as it's okay to put information out on the internet, and the internet's a great thing, okay? The internet's a great thing. I mean, man, I wouldn't have this podcast if it wasn't for the internet and if it wasn't for computers and things like that, okay? And, you know, I'm on Facebook and I'm on YouTube. By the way, check out my YouTube channel. Facebook, go to my Handgun World Podcast Facebook page, okay? Like it. If you haven't liked it, go ahead and do that. If, you know, if you're not following me, just Google or just, I mean, go on to Facebook.com/Handgun World Podcast. That's Facebook.com/Handgun World Podcast. Or just search Handgun World Podcast on Facebook and like it and follow me and stuff like that, okay? So that's excellent. I'm Handgun World on Twitter. I use the internet like crazy. But if some of you can find something that I've put on the internet that is not what what a reasonable person would think is reasonable in terms of my self-defense, please bring it up to me. Please bring it up to me and I'll try to correct it. One of the things that I've heard from people is that the internet, especially Facebook, Twitter, sites like that, that really once you put information up there, it can never be taken down. Now, I'm not computer savvy enough to really know if that's true or what that means. So again, if you're computer savvy enough to tell me about that, by all means, let me know. Call in, email in, whatever. Because I don't understand it, but I'm just going to take people's word for it that it can't be taken down. So think about whatever you put on the internet as being permanent. I'll say that again. Think about whatever you put on the internet as being permanent. Now, if you are going to put something on the internet that's controversial, which I've done, right? How many of you think that any one or two of my shows are controversial? Well, I hope you do. I hope you do, because I've intended for even more of them than that to be controversial. That was my goal in some of these episodes. Just be ready to defend what you put on the internet. Okay? Just have a really good defense. Have a good side to your story. Try to back it up with facts or examples or research study. All that is going to serve you well in court, and it's going to serve you well in the court of public opinion, which, you know, that's something that very few people talk about, is the court of public opinion. A lot of people out there, like Masada Yub, teaching, you know, the legal ramifications and the citizens' rules of engagement. And Mass does talk about the court of public opinion in his class, so I'll give him credit for that. But there's also a lot of people out there that teach classes that don't talk too much about the court of public opinion. You are going to get tried. Whether you're even charged or not, you're most likely going to get treated, or excuse me, you're most likely going to get tried in the court of public opinion. Would you agree? And sometimes the court of public opinion, as we know, is going to determine whether charges are brought against you or not. So be real careful. And a lot of what people are going to use to form their opinion in the public is going to be what you put on the internet. So, you know, take me, for example. I'm a very public figure because of doing this podcast and my YouTube channel and stuff like that. And, of course, the training that I do outside of all of this. Well, you know, I'm sure that if I were in a shooting, that all my podcasts would probably be scrutinized with a fine-tooth comb, and all my internet posts, and all my YouTube videos, and things like that. I try very, very hard not to put anything unreasonable or what a reasonable person would think is unreasonable. I try very hard not to put that out there. So if you find something that I've put out, please let me know about it. I'd like to know. So the internet is a wonderful thing. The internet can also be a bad thing. So be real careful with it, is all I'm saying. That's the primary focus of this second half topic. That's pretty much what I wanted to say for this episode. I know it's a relatively short episode given the typical length of the episodes that I put out, but I wanted this to be hard-hitting. I wanted it to be informative. I didn't want it to be something that, you know, was dragging on too long, because I'm finding out that I like to say what I want to say and get off the air. Okay? I don't want to ramble on too much. Boy, there's some podcasts out there I listen to where they ramble and they ramble, and even when they interview somebody, they make the same point about five times in the same show. And after about two times, I'm thinking to myself, I got it. I know what you're talking about. Move on to the next topic. So, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to move on to the next topic, which is closing this episode. So, please give me some feedback. Voicemail, email, Facebook, whatever you want. All the feedback I do read. I may not comment on everything because there's just simply not enough time, and I like to be as brief as I can. With all that said, I'm Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is that dreaded bang when he was only expecting a click, or a click when he was expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.